Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. The show is for the week of April 24th, 2017. Today, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, the one and only, a man among men, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
That's good. I'm glad you're with us. So, D.R., the report card recently came due on Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's environmental performance, a coalition of Massachusetts environmental organizations, nonprofits, et cetera, sent out a report card. Do you have it? Can you give us an idea of what the governor and his administration got? What sort of grades he got?
Yes, the Globe noted that he received a C overall. According to David Abel of the Globe, quote, individual grades including an A for implementing a food waste ban for large institutions, a B-plus for land conservation and promoting energy efficiency, but he received a D-minus for its collection of solid waste data and a D for pursuing new natural gas pipelines, its efforts to curb greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector and water pollution. And George Bacharach of Environmental League, League of Massachusetts, he noted that, you know, that he respects Baker. He told WBUR that he respects Baker, but he doesn't think that Baker regards environmental protection as a priority. Mm-hmm. And considering the sort of abandonment of these issues from a federal level, states like Massachusetts have to aggressively step their game up. So it looks like Mr. Baker is going to have to hit the books and sort of study a bit harder to get that C up to an A.
Up to an A, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Governor Baker has done a few interesting things, right? He put out his executive mm-hmm. order after the Kane ruling. So just so everyone remembers, the Kane ruling said that the Massachusetts Global Warming Solutions Act emissions reductions were enforceable. There were real mm-hmm. mandates. And so the governor came out with a plan to try and get there, although he kind of punted by saying that he would release the goals for the next round, you know, late in his term. He hasn't been actively opposing greenhouse gas emissions and environmental stuff, but he's certainly trying to keep a low profile, I guess, is the kindest mm-hmm. thing, right? It's not the biggest thing on his agenda, which mm-hmm. is unfortunate.
But it may well be the biggest thing on the agenda of the electorate, and yeah. figure that this would be something that he would keep front of mind, so to speak.
Well, there's two things. I mean, I guess there's two specific cases that I'm aware of where the governor has been sort of a milquetoast. I'm trying to think. There's some poem like Alfred Tennyson talking about, you know, people that are milquetoast are the ones that are all going to burn in hell, the ones that didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. There are two issues that are kind of important in Massachusetts right now from a global warming perspective. One is there is what's called a compressor station being built in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Right? And this compressor station is a big building that basically is kind of the end of the natural gas pipeline these guys want to build. They're still pushing to build it. The compressor station does exactly what the name says. It takes the incoming gas and compresses it to ever higher pressure. Right? Mm-hmm. So now you have more and more gas at this very high pressure. I guess it's noisy, smelly, dangerous, all bad things. People mm-hmm. in Weymouth have been fighting to stop it. I think the governor, if he wanted to, could throw some of his weight behind it. But the governor says things like, FERC, which is FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, basically that they've already made the decision and it's out of his hands, right? Mm-hmm. Which is hardly the sort of guy in a white knight you want to ride in. Mm-hmm. The other kind of important case that's happening as we speak is something called the Otis Forest, O-T-I-S, I guess, on the Otis Air Force Base in Western Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. It's a region, apparently, it has old growth timber in it. believe it or not. I mean, I thought we had all the trees chopped down around here by 1830, but I guess a few trees survived out in the. And of course, what we're going to do now is chop down some of those old growth trees, so we're going to run a pipeline through the middle of the forest. Mm-hmm. And again, if the governor wanted to put the boo on it, he could, and he hasn't done that. So there are calls for that. Tell me, DR, what's going on there?
And Senators Warren and Markey, they sent a letter to FERC calling upon the agency to, according to the Berkshire Eagle, to revoke its April 12th notice to start the tree cutting and construction, because they said that the FERC lacked a quorum to make that decision. So it's interesting that to see Warren and Markey stepping up, speaking for the trees, so to speak, and Baker essentially, you know, sort of leafing it alone.
Oh, come on. You're killing me. He's leafing it alone in Lorax. Senator Lorax is speaking for the trees. Oh, my God. Well, so we'll put up link. I mean, you can take action. It's my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong, DR, but I believe there was a woman. I don't have the name. I read it somewhere. I apologize. She has been waiting outside the governor's office during her lunch hour in the State House every day for the last month, hoping to speak to the governor about the Weymouth compressor plant, and no one's come out to deal with her yet. I'll try and put up some links to that kind of stuff, but these are ongoing things here in Massachusetts, and it's curious that they have to do with FERC, because that's another interesting topic that we've got. I saw an article that talked about a fight that is brewing between the states and the federal government. If you can imagine that, I've never heard that before. Again, FERC is this shadowy organization, the federal, I don't know, shadowy, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, right? Mm-hmm. And it is currently staffed, supposed to have five people on the board. It only has two. They're both Democrats, and they can't do anything, as you said, because they don't have a quorum. They're stuck all the time, right? And the issue that's come up in New York State, and the reason I bring it up is because these are sort of developing issues all around the world. New York State recently has done two things that would seem to violate FERC and the federal government's authority. One is that they've allowed ratepayer money from the electricity bills to be turned over to a nuclear power plant someplace in northern New York, which, of course, makes everybody go crazy, right? Because now you're subsidizing the nuclear power plant, their mistakes, right? But the other big issue is that the Governor Cuomo in New York has rejected several natural gas pipelines based on the Clean Water Act, which I guess he has the right to do. But that sets up a direct conflict with the federal government in the person of the FERC agency over who gets to make that decision, right?
Yes.
Very interesting.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, how this all resolves itself. And I believe there was also a piece in Think Progress recently about, you know, whether or not FERC will, in defiance of the Trump administration, when it's fully staffed, will they basically allow clean energy projects, or basically sabotage clean energy projects for ideological reasons?
Right.
So it's going to be probably the most fascinating fight of the Trump years, assuming they're years, you know, what goes on with FERC.
I think the whole question of FERC and these, unfortunately, at least partially in the business that we're in of fighting climate change, a lot of the stuff takes place in these bureaucratic, like long-term kind of geeky issues, because they all have to do with how much does your energy cost and where is the energy coming from, stuff that most people don't really care about, right? Or have a tough time ginning up a lot of interest in. But it's real, and it's the place you need to know about. But I guess the rant I wanted to have was that this question of the conflict between New York State and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, it would seem that a guy like our new EPA administrator, Mr. Scott Pruitt, right, who believes firmly in 10th Amendment states' rights, would be rushing to help Governor Cuomo to defend his state's rights from those awful guys in the federal government. And I don't see it. And I'm not sure he's even weighed in yet. But there you go. Mr. Pruitt, your hypocrisy is smelling.
He's one of those guys who's for states' rights in theory.
Except when it goes against his donors. Man. Anyway, so there's the thing with FERC. So here we've been in sort of Massachusetts politics, Governor Baker, Weymouth, Otis State Park, old growth. What are we going to do about it? Et cetera, et cetera. Turns out this past week, there is something you can do about it. Turns out this past week, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, we had a webinar where we talked about the legislative priorities for Massachusetts over the next year. Mm-hmm. 2 years, actually, the term of the Massachusetts legislature. And if you're not from Massachusetts, hang in there, because these are things that apply to everyone and would apply to everyone else's state at some point, right? But the MCAN team has been looking for laws, bills in the legislature that make a big difference on climate, that are aligned with what cities and towns want to do, which is where MCAN has its heartbeat, right, in terms of helping mm-hmm. people in cities and towns do things. And there are bills that are winnable in the sense that they could become law with the right sort of assistance. Mm-hmm. And so let me tell you briefly about the three different bills. I won't go into much detail, but these are actual bills that are in front of have been filed in the legislature. First is a bill that wants to increase the renewable energy, increase the rate at which the renewable energy systems in Massachusetts grow. So currently, basically, every year, the renewable energy stuff, whether it's solar panels, wind turbines, whatever, grows by 1% a year. Okay, this bill would double that to 2% a year, and that mm-hmm. will get us much, over the course of years, right, 2%, 2% each year, that's a pretty good growth rate when you're looking at trying to get to zero carbon emissions by 2050, right, 2% a year mm-hmm. for the next 40 years. That's pretty good. So there's one bill that's Senate 1876 and House 2100 trying to increase the renewable portfolio energy requirement. The second bill that's in there is very interesting. It's called Solar for All. Right? So the big problem with solar energy is typically it's been considered boutique, right? You have mm-hmm. to have enough money to put solar panels on your roof. So you may have a McMansion with solar panels on it, but if you're a renter, it's much harder to get into the solar energy game. And so there mm-hmm. is a bill, Senate 1831 and House 3396. Again, it gets very geeky, but the effort is to make renewable energy in the terms of using, say, the energy from a solar panel, much more accessible to renters and people of color and low-income and disadvantaged areas. So that's mm-hmm. a good bill. And the third one is, I think, one that's close to your heart, DR, is to impose a carbon price in Massachusetts. Yes. And there's several, but this is, I think, the Barrett bill. It's Senate 1821 and 1726. And MCAN board member Cindy Lupi was talking about it. She made a very interesting case that the carbon price would, first of all, fight global warming by reducing carbon emissions. Great. Mm-hmm. But it also has a raw economic aspect to it, because in Massachusetts at least, we send $20 billion a year. That's $20 billion with a B, $20 billion out of the state to buy fossil fuels. So mm-hmm. to the extent that we can build renewable energy in the state, we keep that $20 billion here in the state, and the economic multiplier effect of keeping all that money here in Massachusetts is fantastic in its own right. Forget about global warming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, DR, I know that you like the idea of carbon pricing, right? Is that mm-hmm. accord with your view of things?
Definitely, definitely. It'll be interesting to see if Massachusetts can succeed where Washington State failed last year. And it will be, for bragging rights purposes, if nothing else, it will be nice to see Massachusetts become the first state to do this.
Right, right. And so speaking of how will it be that Massachusetts becomes the first state to pass, say, a carbon tax or any of these bills? Well, it turns out that MCAN has a program. I'll put up links to it that It's certainly, for example, you can get a link to watch the video, see the slides. I mean, hear what the people had to say. You can sign up. So what we're planning is for people within the state can sign up with this program, and once in a while, you'll get some advice as to who you should talk to and what you should say. In particular, can you go to your town selectmen and ask them to sign a letter saying, we like this, you know, we the town of East Grottom Bottom, right? We like the Solar for All bill. And then that goes up to the State House, right? That's where the political pressure comes from, is people in local districts lobbying their local state representatives or their local town meeting or whatever. And MCAN will help you do that. And so that's a way, if you're looking for something to do, this is a path forward. You agree that all power, what is it? All politics is local, but what's your favorite? What's your favorite saying? No. What did Frederick Douglass say?
Power concedes nothing without a demand, and right. as I've also said, you got to think globally and resist locally.
Absolutely. So I will put up links to. There's a web page on the MCAN. There's a page on the MCAN website that details what some of these things are, and we'll have the links to it. If you're at all inclined, sign up. It's a small ask. It's not like you're going to be sucked into the whirlwind of being a Paul Manafort lobbyist or anything. But this is a way to make a change, and so it's a good thing to do. So, DR, we'll have to leave it there. Another week has sped by here. Let me tell everybody, as I said, we'll have links on the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone and using such antiquated apps as Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and Google Play if you have an Android. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.